The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
This is Tasman Report with news, feature interviews and voices shaping Aorere. I'm John Bullock and the show is a production of the Tasman District Council. In this episode, how insurance works in times of recovery, we meet the chair of the Motueka Community Board and get an update on Plan Change 81. But for starters, let's hear from the Minister for Housing, RMA Reform and Infrastructure, Chris Bishop.
Quite fundamental transformational change is coming to set New Zealand up for success in the 2030s. A lot of that is local government reform, RMA reform and infrastructure funding and financing reform.
That was Minister Chris Bishop, who, along with the Minister of Local Government, opened up a three-month window for the named five groups of local councils to put forward proposals for amalgamation. Tasman was not mentioned. However, we've invited Tim King, while not speaking as mayor, to give us his view of the government plans.
I think one thing that's really positive is that there is some very clear direction from the current government around what they would like to see in this space. First, there is the three-month window. I believe that's largely targeted at those areas with regional councils and territorial authorities that wish to create a unitary council. And then there's the backstop provision that they've announced with very little detail about how that might work, that post-election, those who may not have had the opportunity or taken up the opportunity in the 3 months will be put into some form of process to consider their options or be required to consider the options post-election. So I actually think that's very helpful to provide that clarity over timeframes and direction.
One did pick up from the ministerial announcement a certain urgency to this, given debt, the need to increase GDP and a better way of operating New Zealand. I mean, is that what you picked up?
Yes, I think that is certainly sitting behind it. And I've always been a strong advocate for central government making some decisions around the future structure and shape of local government. And while I understand the approach to enable regions to come up with their own arrangements and different agreements, I do think that a degree of central government coordination is really important to ensure that collectively the entire system works cohesively. If I compare it to the three waters and the local water done well process, yes, it has rationalised the number of water supply entities, but we've now ended up with three different models in the country around local water done well, so in-house business units, single CCOs and jointly owned CCOs. I'm not sure that every region coming up with their own bespoke arrangements is necessarily the best outcome collectively. I also think it's really important that central government coordinates the rationalisation of central government agencies and entities, the regions in New Zealand that they apply to. So, for example, currently fire service, police, Department of Conservation, a whole range of central government agencies operate on different boundaries, borders and regions. So I think coordinating central government's reform process and local government's reform process to end up with a kind of comprehensive and cohesive approach, if you're trying to drive efficiency, effectiveness and economic outcomes, to me that is the best option. The only people who can do that is central government. So look, I genuinely support the direction they're provided. I personally think they should probably go one step further, provide a bit more central government decision making. But I understand why politically they want to leave it to regions to figure it out amongst themselves.
It does, from some media commentary, appear, or I know somebody's drawn a comparison to what happened with electricity reform and a few other things we've done in New Zealand, and whether in fact we actually even have the gene pool to pull this stuff off.
Look, I have no doubt we have. I mean, we're capable of doing whatever it is we want to do as a country. Like, I have no doubt we have the capability to do this. Whether we have the political will or not, that's a second question. It's always really difficult, I think, to get regions to debate these issues internally because they are, by definition, often divisive. And that division hangs on for a long time after a decision's made. Sometimes the best thing is for, you know, as much as I know people dislike the idea of central government kind of imposing things, sometimes it's better that it's done that way. People can focus their dissatisfaction with the outcome kind of externally, and then internally everyone just gets on and makes the best and delivers the best outcome based on the direction that you're given. So there's pluses and minuses both ways.
I see you've commented that a big concern for you is rural representation, and it is a biggie because communities are different, aren't they? Different desires, needs, etc.
Absolutely. I think particularly as a unitary authority, where a big component of what we do is around the rules and regulations under currently the RMA, but in the future new environmental management legislation. Those rules and regulations largely impact on primary industry rural people much more than they do on urban populations. So my view as a unitary authority or a regional council, then having that rural representation is critically important. It's unclear from the announcements to date whether the requirements that currently exist under the Local Government Act around the plus or minus 10% representation threshold apply to a proposal that may be put forward either within the 3 months or in the backstop process. But I've always made the point that is the single biggest thing for me, is the last thing you give up in any form of, in my view, any democratic process is your vote or your representation. And currently the way the legislation is structured, an amalgamated council will by definition have a predominance of elected members that will come from the Richmond, Nelson, urban, and that's just driven by the population.
Okay, just to draw a line under what is going to be an evolving story, I know you're speaking here today as Tim King. So where do we go to from here?
So the council will clearly have to consider relatively quickly whether they want to entertain the idea of putting together a proposal within the three-month window. So that will happen relatively soon. And again, in my role as mayor, whatever the council's direction is in that regard, that's what I will obviously work to implement. I think it's also fair to say that in the event that the current government is re-elected and they follow through on the backstop and effectively make some direction around the future shape of local government in this region, then whoever happens to be in the, including me, whether or not I think it's the best outcome, at that point, our role becomes to make, to work on delivering the best outcome based on the direction that we're provided. So, again, at the moment, it's a decision around whether the council wishes to enter into that discussion, but it may, post an election, depending on the result, be a case of not a choice about whether or not to, but how to best implement.
That was Tim King speaking outside of his role as mayor on the just announced plans for local government reform. Now, links to the media release on this is in the show notes. In upcoming episodes, we'll be featuring the work undertaken by our community boards. So it's great to welcome into this episode Claire Hutt, who's chair of the Motueka Community Board. We started off our conversation with a reflection on how the new board is settling into its role.
It's a very diverse board, so like anything, it takes time to get to know each other's personality and just build up that relationship, which I think we have focused on, and onwards and upwards.
Well, it's a key thing about a community board, isn't it? It's a great collection of skills and life experience as well, and then all that comes to into play when you're trying to make decisions and have an informed discussion.
I'd say we all have very different opinions. We've got one thing in common. All of us have one thing in common. We want to do the best for the community. But we've all got very differing opinions on that. So we do have some robust, respectful discussions. And it does say it takes time. It's not something that can be done in one meeting even, so that's a real challenge, is making sure we're all heard around the table and hopefully then coming to a decision.
Just looking at some of the business that you've been conducting on the board of recent times, there was the submission to the annual plan. Out of that, what were kind of like two things that you said, yeah, okay, we're really getting down to business here?
Well, our annual plan submission was quite comprehensive. But I guess two things that stand out just off the cuff is stormwater issues in Motueka. So we've put various ideas in for that, for consideration with TDC. Some of those will be more relevant, I guess, into the long-term plan, but let's put it in the annual plan so it stays on the radar. We also want to have more of the community drop-in events, which we had our first one this triennium on the 24th of April, which was really successful. So we want to continue with that. And also looking at the resilience and emergency preparedness. So that was also a huge thing in the annual plan as well.
When thinking about the community drop-in session, the recent one, was there sort of like a couple of key topics that came out of that or concerns that people have?
Mainly it was wanting to have more of the community engagement because we do have the formal meetings once a month, but some people, they don't feel comfortable going to a formal meeting speaking in a public forum environment. So they've just felt really encouraged that they could just come to us in a really relaxed environment and tell us their woes and what we were doing. We actually had some positive comments as well. And we had a suggestion box. So that was a really positive thing that came out of it. And that was quite consistent, that people don't always feel comfortable going into that formal environment. So we're going to be definitely planning on doing them once a quarter.
Special projects. I now understand you're calling for ideas around that for the special projects program. What is it?
So the community board special projects. So we get funding each year. Some of it is still unspent from, we're sort of playing catch up, if you like, from COVID times. So we go out to public consultation or ideas, and then we rank them, we vote on them with the board, have a look at our budget, and so each project, generally speaking, is capped at 10,000 per project, but we can go a little bit over if we feel it's absolutely important and there's no other budget from anywhere else. So it could be anything from contributing to a footpath repair that is a quite low down in the TDC priority in their footpath matrix, so we contribute to it to get it brought into more as a priority. Or it could be picnic tables, it could be seating, it could be we contributed to the Dex Reserve playground. So it's really varied.
I was going to say, and it's great because you really are able to get a local focus on issues that are really important to people, aren't they?
That's right. So, yes, it just, it could be something really simple. For instance, if you're, for elderly people, they're walking into the CBD area and they get a bit tired on the way through. So, okay, well, let's put a bench seat in various locations around residential streets coming into the CBD, so it's more accessible, thinking of everybody in the community. We'll be going out to public consultation again in the new financial year, which starts in July. So we'll ask for suggestions possibly August, September time. But if you've got any suggestions at all, you can email mcb@tasmin.govt.nz. So that's the Motueka Community Board. Or you can go into any of your service centres.
That was Claire Hutt, Chair of the Motueka Community Board. The Council's Information Forum meeting on the 28th of April received a recovery update report on last year's June-July floods. To take us through that, we're joined by Riley Peterson, who is our Recovery Operations Manager, to update us on the recovery work across roads, rivers and community infrastructure.
The majority of the work is concentrating in those areas that you mentioned, and roading, what you'll see, I suppose, is a lot of work in the big, there's big work going on in the, like, the Riwaka, Sandy Bay Road, like the Marahoe Hill section. There's a lot of work in that space. Kai Tiri Tiri, Sandy Bay Road, and the Motueka West Bank. So there's, you'll see a lot of work going on there. So that's what you'll see in the roading space. Good news is that the work on the Graham Valley Road is started. So that's amazing. So it's just started this month and it should be finished by July. So that's if you want to go hiking up in Mount Arthur Way, then you post-July should be able to get there.
So in an overview, how are we with funding? I mean, I know in the forum meeting you had, you there was two announcements there. What were those, and then sort of what is the bigger picture?
So one of the announcements was that we've finally got our funding through from Waka Kotahi NZTA for the funding for the roading network upgrade that we needed in terms of the recovery space. So that's just come through, which is great because it's almost $19 million. So that is that's an excellent thing. And then the other good news part was that this bit of roading work for the Graham Valley Road has been done. So that's the funding for that is coming through as well.
Well, we can't talk about funding unless we talk about insurance. And I've got to admit that kind of trying to understand it, because it does seem to be a bit of a time lag, but one understands these things. Where are we with insurance? How do you explain it to somebody like me in relation to what you've had to do with post the June, July floods?
Wow, it's so complicated. I think for us, we've got our insurance company that we're dealing with, and we've got NEMA, the National Emergency Management Agency, and both of them are contributing to the pot, but they both have different requirements, and the insurance company want to see examples of sites, and so that's been taking time. So it's very long, complex work to do that. So we're working with both of those organisations and entities to come up with what they're happy with, but they both have different requirements, so it's working in that way as well.
And in a way, in council, we're very lucky because we do have a specialist working in this area. Can you tell me about her role?
Yeah, Deirdre Heremai is amazing. She used to work in the insurance industry, so she is here to tell you a lot more about this.
The insurance is a very long, convoluted process in an event of this magnitude. So we are progressing very well. Points to remember are, one, the insurers are not local. We have multiple insurers. So we are working with the loss adjuster and the claim specialist from Aon to prepare the material to put in front of the insurers. So just bear in mind, they haven't seen the details yet. They've requested a certain degree of detail. And so what we're working on are site examples that illustrate the region as a whole. So at the moment, there's probably about 20 sites, and we have to go through each of those and identify the extent of the damage to the assets. Now, remembering that most of the assets have been destroyed. So we've had to produce and create previous drone images of what was there, what it looked like at the time of the event, and what it looks like now. So that's why it's taking so long. And the plan is that the insurers have agreed to this process where we put in front of them these site examples, where we go through and say, you know, asset destroyed, asset parts of it are remaining, etc. And so then they assess that, and we're looking for a progress payment type of model. So it will take time, but we are going in the right direction. What slowed us down a wee bit was that the claims specialist from Aon left in November, so then we had to bring the new person up to speed, but they are doing a lot of work in the background. So I have every confidence that it will have a good ending. We have been progressing the payments that have been made so that we're working on the NEMA information that they need as well. So, you know, remembering that the insurers only cover 40% of what we claim, and then 60% is claimed through NEMA. So it is progressing, But it will take another 3 or 4 months before we get confirmation back from the insurers that you to give you a better idea as a council as to where it stands.
That was Deirdre Hemmerera, Council's Assurance and Improvement Advisor, talking about the process of insurance when it comes to payouts as a consequence of natural disasters. Council's Environmental Policy Team is now in the process of preparing to notify later this month or in early June Plan Change 81 and Change 1 to the Tasman Regional Policy Statement. Now, all of this work will implement the first 10 years of the Nelson-Tasman Future Development Strategy. We're now joined by Urban and Rural Policy Team Leader Jeremy Butler.
Well, right now we are getting all of the aspects of Plan Change 81 organised. There's a lot of documentation that goes with a plan change, particularly around evidence. We are checking all of our documentation back against its original objectives. You know, what are we actually trying to achieve here? And make sure that all of those evidence streams are pointing back to those objectives. We are refining the final wording to make sure that all of the wee changes are picked up and then the plan will work really well together, all the different provisions and all the different aspects. And again, supporting information. So we've got a wide range of experts who have been involved and have advised us, finalising their reports and tying everything together.
Okay, notification, just to explain to us about that. How does that work?
Notification is something that happens to start the public process. So it's the plan change is notified in the local media, and what that does is opens it up for submissions. So that's really the opening of the submissions, which lasts for 30 working days, so roughly 6 weeks, and that's the opportunity for anybody to put in a submission, to lodge a submission, to say whether they support the plan change, whether they oppose the plan change, or whether there are changes they want to for the plan change.
So still plenty of room for community input on this, because there has been a little bit of criticism. People hear streamlining and they concur that maybe things have been shortened when they shouldn't have been, but that's not the case.
No, absolutely not. So the public submission process is exactly the same as any other plan change. We have had, I guess there's a slight nuanced difference that this is the submission phase. So this isn't so much engagement or consultation. It is the opportunity for a formal legal submission, which can then hold weight further down the process. We've certainly done that engagement previously. So we've had probably three rounds of engagement where we've got feedback from the public. We've brought all that together into the best plan change that we think we can make, and now's the chance for the public to actually lodge those formal submissions, just like any other plan change, and that would include further submissions, which we can come to.
And one of the great things, though, is that this is an exciting moment for Tasman.
Absolutely. This is really the culmination of a lot of work. It's also putting into place the Future Development Strategy. So the Future Development Strategy, as many will know, was adopted in 2022. There was a previous one in 2019. Those Future Development Strategies didn't actually do anything on their own. It's really to implement it and to actually make the changes on the ground that are usable for people and to show results, that needs a plan change. And that's what Plan Change 81 is. It's the implementation of the FDS so that we can provide enough growth capacity and business capacity for at least the next 10 years. And that's really critical for having enough places to live, for having a wider variety of homes, smaller homes that we need for our aging population, and also to give that kind of affordability and lots of places for people to live how they want to live for the younger generations coming through as well.
Jeremy Butler, Team Leader for Urban and Rural Policy, talking about the upcoming notification later this month or early next for Plan Change 81. The full council meeting on Thursday, 7 May, included the Mayor's report, in which he took time to thank the volunteers who organised this year's Anzac Day commemoration.
And I think I'm always amazed that even in the smallest of communities, the numbers of people that turn out to those events. There's a huge amount of organisation goes in behind the scenes, particularly for some of them, where they are quite the event. There is a lot of work that goes on by volunteer groups working with the RSA to put together the ceremonies that people attend. So I'd just like to note as part of my report I guess, our thanks on behalf of the council and the wider community to all of those people who put all the work in before Anzac Day to ensure that those ceremonies run as smoothly as they do. I'll just touch on the citizenship ceremonies, of which we seem to be running almost one a month at the moment, and they continue to be really enjoyable occasions for the attendees, and it's just always interesting to chat with those people as well.
That was Mayor Tim King talking to his monthly report at the Thursday, May 7 full council meeting. And you've been listening to Tasman Report, with news, feature interviews and the voices shaping Aorere. Check out our show notes for handy links, and I'm John Bullock. Tasman Report is a production of the Tasman District Council.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.